Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Jenny Strozier Keeping It Real show. I received a call from Jenny Strozier saying that because of his employment today, he will not be able to join the show himself. However, he expects guests to call in. And so, I want to welcome you who have already tuned in tonight. The telephone number for this show is 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. My name is Mary Neal. I'm the host here at Human Rights Demand. And Jenny Strozier is our regular Saturday night host of this show. I believe we have him on the line now. Hello there. How are you today?
How you doing, Ms. Mary?
Wonderful, Jenny. I'm so glad you were able to call after all. How are you?
Well, I was just laying here. I was just waiting at 9 o'clock come on because I was ready. I was geared up and ready to go.
Oh, well, I'm so glad, Jenny. Wonderful. So you got off from work a little bit earlier than you thought.
No, what I did is I put in for a job. I got a job, but I got to go to training next Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Okay.
And then I start working Wednesday. It was so good that the man told me that I can pick out any position in the store I want to work in.
Isn't it wonderful? Do you mind if I ask what's the name of the store? Is this the Kroger store?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. Well, we want to congratulate you and congratulate Kroger on getting an excellent employee. This is marvelous, Jenny. Let me just say to the radio audience that we are following Jenny Strozier as he re-enters society after 46 years of incarceration from the time he was around 10 years old until his mid-50s. No, he never seriously hurt anyone or anything like that, but Jenny Strozier kept being re-sentenced to jail, longer sentences, primarily because he did not really follow the prison rules. And so that's what happens. And I want to turn it over to you now, Jenny. Right now you don't have any guest callers, but yes, you do. You just got a guest caller. And I want to put you on air. Hi, 7251. How are you tonight?
I'm great. My name is Patricia Brooks. And right now I'm just getting home off the road, and I was told the call by Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny is on the call now. Johnny, here is Ms. Brooks.
Right. Ms. Brooks is a good friend of mine. I met Ms. Brooks at a conference in Atlanta, and I told Ms. Brooks about you. This is a young lady that I was telling you about, Ms. Mary, that got the organization of Moms, Mothers on a Mission.
Oh, wonderful, Ms. Brooks.
Hey.
Wonderful.
And, I invited Ms. Brooks on tonight because I wanted Ms. Brooks to tell the story about her, I believe it was her brother, Ms. Brooks.
Okay.
I think it was her brother or somebody, I think she said it was.
It's my son, that's who it is. My son, I started my organization every bit about 7 years ago, and it all started from my son knowing that people that was in prison that needed help on the outside, and there's a lot of people that's in prison don't have anyone. And so me and him, we were getting ready to start this organization. And he got into some trouble. dealing with his dad, and now he's in prison for life for something that his father did. And at the time, I was kind of dragging my feet with Mad Mom, but God does everything for a reason. And I'm not going to say, I'm going to say that Mad Mom was born right after the judge gave my son life in prison for something that his father did. And when I was telling the judge and when I was telling the lawyer that the father had did it, nobody wanted to listen to me because they felt like I was some type of desperate mother. And I would probably say anything to get my child out. But the father, when I was asking him to help me get an attorney for Tyrone, his name is Tyrone Wells, when they were asking me to get, I was asking him to help me get an attorney to represent our son. He told me that my son, he wasn't going to do it because our son hadn't did anything. And then when I asked him why, how did he know he didn't do it, he says, I know because I did. And right there, it devastated me because I just could not believe a parent could do something like that to their own child. And so I started going back and forth to court with my son, and that's when I realized that not only my son needed an advocate in the courtroom, a lot of black men did, because I seen a lot of black men that were sitting there doing a crime that a white man had, the same crime, even a worse record. And they would send the black, they would give the black men, I live in Jacksonville, Florida, they would give them 20 years, 10 years. Some of these boys had never been in trouble. Some of these boys was just with somebody that, I remember one particular case where one boy was in the car. He had caught a ride home with the other boy. And the boy told him that he was going in the store to get something and he'll be right back out. And the boy ran to the car, came out the store running and jumped in the car. And he said that kept asking the guy what was going on. And the store people came outside of the guy that was running the store, the Indian guy, came out and shot at the car and killed the boy that was driving, that boy that went in there and robbed the store. Do you know they gave this boy had never been in prison. He had just finished school, had his first job, doing very well, good student, planning on going to college when school came back in. They gave him life. Life. And when I seen that, and after I spoke with him and spoke with some of the job he had just got in the car with the boy, one of the witnesses said that he'd seen the boy walking and the car stopped and he asked him, did he want to ride? And he got in the car with the boy, and that's what happened. You know, sometimes things happen to people for a reason, but in this young boy's case and in my son's case, you got a lot of people that's sitting in prison for nothing, for something someone else has done. And what my organization do, I'm an advocate. So I fight for guys that's in prison, that's being mistreated, being, you know how they pepper spray the boys when they're in prison. I fight for them when something like that has happened, when a family called me and tell me that they need me to call the warden and talk to the warden. I send letters and write to the Innocent Project, but my thing is that the Innocent Project is a really good organization, but in the black community, we need an Innocent Project of our own. We need to make a difference in our community. We need to get out. We, the people, need to get out and fight for our community. Yes, I am mad, Mom, and I am very mad because I've seen so much stuff go down in the courtroom until it's unreal. And what my question is, what will it take for us to do something to keep our kids from from going to prison, I mean, a first offense, it used to be back in the day, a person made a first, did a first offense, no matter what it was, they didn't give you life, they gave you time. And in Jacksonville, Florida, and all over the world, all over the United States, the time don't fit the crime. You know, you let somebody off that's white, rich, I mean, they can get off. But you got poor, you got black and poor people, you got Hispanic people that's really, really spending some big time in prison for things that other people get out for. And I just feel like it should be one law. And until we stand up and be counted, I don't know what to think. I really don't. And I'm really angry about that. I'm upset because I'm just seeing it too much. I'm seeing it too much. So Johnny has told me a lot about you. Is this Mary?
Yes, this is Mary. And okay. I want to ask you, please, to give us your contact information, because I'm sure a number of people who are listening now and who may listen to this tape in the future will want to contact you about their loved ones who are serving time and who may have extenuating circumstances and need your help. So please be free to give us your contact information, whether it's an email address or a phone number or both. And if you have a website, we'd like to know what that is so that people can begin contacting you for advocacy. If you charge anything for your advocacy, we'd like to know what type of fees you charge and what have you. So give us some information regarding that, please.
Okay. No, I don't charge a fee. I do this from the goodness of my heart. I go to court with people from the goodness of my heart. But I do have a GoFundMe page. It's on GoFundMe, and it's with Mad Moms, Mothers on a Mission. I'm sorry about the noise. I got this 3-year-old boy. He can't go home with his mom soon enough. But my Facebook page is Mad Mom Mothers on a Mission, and you'll go on there, and you'll see where I've done marches. You'll see where I have. The GoFundMe page is on there, and they can click on that. If they want to donate to Mad Moms, they can donate $1 if they want to. They can donate $2. It doesn't matter. All I need is just some help, because I buy stamps and I send them to the guys in prison. I buy envelopes and I send them to the guys in prison. People that can't have family members that's in prison in the state of Florida, you can't write. I don't know whether that's anywhere else, but you cannot write from prison to prison. And so what I do is they'll send me their letters and who they want me to send it to, and then I'll send it to their loved ones, or a girlfriend, or a husband and a wife that may be in prison. They won't let them write. And so I do that, and my contact information is 904-894-7251. My email address is missmickeyparson@yahoo.com. If you want to shoot me, I get a lot of emails from Stop Mass Incarceration. So I get a lot of emails from them. And so anybody that hear this, if you want to join in with Mad Moms, you know, just let me know. And any information that I can get you, any help, anything I can do to help you as far as calling the prisons, if that will make a difference, because a lot of times these prisons, when they know that somebody is watching them, they're not so hard on the inmate. But see, I think a lot of them have to know that it's not just the family that's concerned. When an organization calls, they get on it. So I have helped a lot of young men and young women in prison, and I've helped a lot of them when they were transitioning from prison to society by helping them get a place to stay. And just like I said, I'm just doing it by the grace of God if someone donates some money to me. If I see somebody hungry that just got out of prison, I just help anybody.
All right. When you say mad moms, how do you spell that? And do you put a space between the mad and the moms?
Yes, it's M-A-D. That's one word. Mad moms, M-O-M-S. And it's mothers, M-O-T-H-E-R-S, on a mission.
Mothers on a mission. That's marvelous. And so you're at Facebook. And are we friends on Facebook?
I don't know. On Facebook, it's Mad Mom, but I have Mickey Thomas is one of my Facebook names, because I really have to keep stuff in Jacksonville. Sometimes you have to be incognito. So what I did was is that, go ahead.
Ms. Brooks. Ms. Mary, can I ask Ms. Brooks some questions?
Yes, I wanted to make it possible for her to hook up with all the people who follow me at Facebook and make it possible for people to know that she's available to do advocacy with them, and that's MAD, M-A-D, Moms, M-O-M-S, Mothers on a Mission at Facebook. And she also gave her email address and her phone number. Her phone number that she gave was 904-894-7251. And she says that she's available to help with advocacy for your incarcerated loved ones or people who are reentering society. So keep that number and that email address and that Facebook address, and also be aware that she is accepting donations through GoFundMe. And so this is a marvelous guest that you have, Johnny, and I will go ahead and let you entertain your guest and make her feel right at home and ask her whatever questions you have.
Okay. Ms. Brooks. Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks, I was listening to your story when you was talking about your son and how they railroaded him, you know. And as I was listening to what you said, I was thinking about myself, you know, because I also was a victim of the state of Georgia. You know, in 1968, when I was 10 years old, the state of Georgia stole something from me that I couldn't get back. They stole my whole life, you know, by putting me in prison when I was 10 years old. You know, everybody that I was with pointed the finger at me and said it was me. I was a 10-year-old and didn't know what was going on. But these guys were 15 and 13 and on up, and they were pointing the finger at me saying I was a ringleader. But I didn't know what was going on. At 10 years old, they gave me 35 years. They gave me 35 years and told me that I was going to a prison. Well, I didn't know nothing about no prison. All thing I knew I was going into a prison right here in the state of Georgia, one of the worst young people prison, I believe, in the whole state of Georgia. It was named Alto. But Alto wasn't Alto then. They used to call it Georgia Industrial Institution in the 70s. And when I went to this place, I found out that not only was it a prison, but it was a tuberculosis hospital that the state of Georgia had just opened up. So they were throwing inmates, they were throwing young black men in this tuberculosis hospital, only to do what? To catch TBs and die. most men died, most men was shit. You know what I mean? And they didn't care because all they wanted to do was house you in this White House in this hospitable facility that had a graveyard. Come to find out that the food that they were feeding us, they were making the peanut butter sandwiches in the embalming room. They were keeping the food that we eat in an contaminated cooler where they kept dead bodies at that had TBs. But, you know, most of the men came up test positive for TB. And then the state of Georgia, after so many men died and so many men got sick, young black men. See, this prison didn't have too many white men in it. It had a lot of black men in it because I was one of them. And I remember getting that one. I remember first coming into the prison. I remember my name wasn't even Johnny no more. They just called me nigga when I came in. Just low-rated me. So as they called me nigga for so many times, I thought that was my name. So I'm being in prison. I'm being beat. I'm being questioned about my crime. Who did you all? What crime did you commit? And I'm telling them that I committed a crime. They said, was it against a white person? And then I said, yeah, it was against a white lady. And so they opened my door one night, took me down the hall, and broke my reel. They broke two reels because they beat me so bad. They swore my jaw off. And I come down the hall. I'm in pain. They tell me that I better walk down the hall and I better walk straight. And I better not limp. And I walked down the hall, even though I was in a lot of pain, I did not limp one time because I didn't want them to take me back and continue to beat me. Well, while in this room, I figured that the only way that I know how to stop the beating was to escape. So I started escaping from this pool. Escaping. And I escaped so many times I told pool that they couldn't even keep me in the pool. They didn't know I usually jump the fence. I might be on the yard and just go over the broad daylight. I escaped 27 times. They couldn't keep me. And my last escape, and I got away, I went all the way to Atlanta in 1978. But, you know, I made a vow while I was in prison. I know I had 35 years. The way I was looking at it is I got 35 years. I was looking at the short end of the stick. 35 years, you know, I might get out, you know, blah, 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 you know. I was looking at I got 35 years, and I don't care. So when I escaped, and I went in front of a judge called down at Amsterdam County. And he told me, he said, this young man cut in my courtroom. And when I walked in, I told the judge, I said, judge, I don't give a damn how much time you give me. Just give it to me so I can go back down into this prison and plan my next escape. Because I really didn't care. You know, I was a man that didn't care about nothing. You know, I was in prison. I had been abused all my life, been abused as a kid, coming up, growing up. Then I get to prison, I'm being abused again. So then I got in prison, I made a pact. I swear, you know, enough is enough. I'm not taking it no more. So when I got in there, I said, whoa. You know, just being true and real with you right now, because that's the name of the show, keeping it real. I played a wall on the Ku Klux Klan in the Georgia prison system. You know what I mean? But I used to listen to James Brown sing that song, I wrote it down on my feet and be living on my knees. That's exactly what I mean. So I started standing on my feet. I said, if I fall and die tonight, or if I fall and somebody kill me tomorrow, it's going to be worth it. But I'm going to fight all the way to the end. And I started out with 35 years, and I started fighting, you know. And I fought all the way up to 90 years. I had 90 years. I done went from 35 to 90. So then I know I got a lot of soul. So I'm in prison, you know what I mean? And I'm going through these changes. I'm a young man. I went from a young man to a man, you know what I mean? And I'm still going through these changes where people's abusing me. Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about when people spray you with tear gas and shoot you with stunt guns and beat you with axe hounds. I've been through all of that. You know what I mean? So when I started going through these things, I realized how people would treat me. Then I started fighting back. I started throwing knives. I used to throw 5 knives. I remember being in prison one day in the war. I remember seeing 5 inmates got killed in 1 month. White Ku Klux Klan inmates done killed 5 black inmates. So I told the war, I said, you ain't got no security. I said, pretty soon, I said, your officer going to let me come kill you. Even what he didn't know is his officer let me come through the metal detector. I walked all the way down the hall, walked in his office, produced a 14-inch pussy knife, but I didn't kill it. I just took it and threw it on the desk and said, you did. Your officer let me come kill you to show him that he didn't have no security in his prison. And that all the officers, not one of them, all of them were crooked. Every one of them crooked. Because they used to come shake the black inmate down. They took all our knives and took them over there and give them to the white inmates. So we come out on the yard in the morning, ain't nobody got no knives. So we come out, we humble to being killed and slaughtered on the yard. You know, so what I did is, you know, when you talk about your son and how he was railroaded into the Florida prison system, I know exactly where you come from. You follow what I'm saying? I know exactly what you come from because I've been there and I've done that. You follow what I'm saying? I know what it's like to be in prison and you don't get no mail. I know what it's like to be in prison and you don't go to the canteen. I know what it's like to be in prison and you can't make a phone call home. I know what it's like in prison and you can't get a visit. I know what it's like in prison when the officers beat you up and throw you in the hole and tell your family that they can't come see you. I've been there. I know what it's like.
Wow, that's sad because when I met you and you told me that, you didn't know, but it brought tears to my eyes when I went back to that room and the people that were supposed to come and interview me. I couldn't tell them my story for telling them your story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the kind of stuff that we're trying to prevent, because a lot of people don't realize that when you've been abused like that in prison, they're governed by the law as well. And you only have 2 years after being in prison. If I was trying to talk this guy into filing a lawsuit against the state of Florida that had been raped in the prison. So he only has 2 years from the date, like from the date that you know that you can sue, the date that you know that you can do something about what has happened to you. From that date until 2 years, that's all you have. It's called the statute of limitation law, wherein that you can only file a lawsuit within those 2 years. Now, what me and another organization, I think it's called Crime, I can't think of the name of it, but we got together and filed a lawsuit against the state of Florida, and what we did was, I think it's 15 days, we have to file notice 15 days, and we don't have a lawyer. It's like you can't get these attorneys to fight for you when you know that they have put your loved ones in danger. So what we did, we sent a notice, a 15-day notice to let them know that we're filing a lawsuit for endangerment of our son.
Well, you know, I got an organization right here in the state of Georgia. I don't know if you got one in the state of Florida, but they handle inmate cases. It's an organization I got here in the state of Georgia. It's a human rights organization. They got books where they talk about the in the state of Georgia. They talk about how they fight for inmates. You know, when the epidemic broke out in the 40 kind of jail in Atlanta Hill, all about 2 years ago, when they were talking about the inmates was that had HIV that was being mistreated, you know, this organization filed a lawsuit against it. This organization filed a double suit in 1979 against the George Bush and won. So it is an organization out there that will help you and help the inmates in the state of Florida, but they just got to reach out and get the right information. See, what I do is I go back and they call it adversary. It's an adversary handbook. It says the fairness of prison families. It's an adversary handbook, a guide to help loved ones in Georgia prison. Now, I'm looking at this book as I'm talking to you. And it's an organization right here in Atlanta, and it's called Human Rights. It's a human rights organization. They tell you everything going on in the Georgia prison system. I got to get an update book. And it's at 910 Ponce de Leon. You got Open Door Community, Southern Prison Ministry. You got a lot of ministries up in here. You got a Prison and Jail Project out of American Georgia. You got a project in Southern Institutions for Poverty and that's coming out of Atlanta. You got Southern Christian Leadership, the SCLC. You know, it's a lot of organizations that help Georgia prison. And I know that it's an organization in the same area, probably in the state of Florida. But then again, you have to reach out and seek this information out. Because there are people in the state of Florida that will help you in a lawsuit. But what you got to do is when you file that lawsuit, you got to make it a class action lawsuit. That means everybody got to be on it. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you.
When you make it a class action lawsuit, that means that you file it against the whole state of Florida.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we put on there. We sent notice to every prison in the state of Florida that we sent notice that we were gonna sue them, and they wanted to know why we were gonna sue them. At first, we went up against the rubber stamping, where in that they have. They've been rubber stamping the warrants on our son. And then we went to reading and looking into things, and we found out that they were illegally placing our sons in prison. It's like some type of signature, a signature law of a person that don't really exist. So I would have to get the paper, but as far as SCLC, a lot of these organizations I've went and sat before and attended their meetings and told them my story and told them who I am, but you have a lot of the black organizations aren't like they were back in the day.
But, Bob, what you want to do is you want to find you an organization or you want to find you an attorney that take pro bono. You find you somebody that takes pro bono, that means that he'll take a case, he'll take an inmate case, and he'll do what he got to do. But it got to be pro bono. See, because the prison system, I'm looking at a statistic right here in the Georgia prison system, and it said that the total fines collected from prison in the first year, that was in 2003. Do you know that the prison system in the state of Georgia earned $33 million $125,056 off of inmates, modern day slavery. They earn $33,125,056 in the year of 2003. Well, can you imagine the money that they're making now? So when you file a lawsuit against the Georgia prison system, they got the Georgia prison system or even the Georgia prison system or either State of Florida or Louisiana all in the same thing. It's called the restaurant. It's the biggest business in the whole United States. Do you know Donald Trump got his hand in on that? You know, all the big time folk got their hand in on building on corruption, because corruption is the biggest thing on Wall Street. So when you're talking about I'm sitting here, when you're talking about inmates can't talk to inmates, inmates in prison system in the state of Florida, it's the same way in the state of Georgia. When you call into a prison now to talk to your son in the state of Georgia, do you know they honor, in a correct call, they earned $11,233,506. That's correct calls that they get money off. But they already tell us they're broke. But they always say we broke. How you going to be broke and you making all this money? You making all this money, but in the state of Georgia, you won't give a man but $25. You'll keep him in prison 35 years. He get out, you'll give $25. But the $25 is to make you go out there and rob somebody, because soon you spend that $25, you're going to be ready to go commit a crime and come back.
You're exactly right. And that's why I'm having a meeting on Tuesday. I wish you guys was on the radio Tuesday at 6 in the evening. We're having a meeting. I pulled some this guy together. We have a program in our city called the Blight Committee, and what they do is the city go around in the bad areas, or if you got blight laying around in your area, you could call in and have it removed. I went to one of these blight meetings. I mean, I've been getting emails from them, but I never would go. It's just the Lord told me to go to one of these meetings. When I got to the meeting, I found out that the state was buying these homes for a lot of these people that's been going to the meetings. But most of the people that was there was white guys. They were going in, buying up the homes in the black communities and then reselling the homes to the people. But, see, they were doing it like getting the money from the city to buy the home, getting the money. It was our own taxpaying dollars. And they were getting the money. The city was giving them money to redo the house. And you had a certain amount of time to pay the city back, but see what you were doing, creating jobs and creating housing for people, right? What I came up with was to go to the Black Committee. I have pulled together a realtor and a broker. This guy, he does real estate. He's a black guy, been buying houses ever since he retired from the military. Then I pulled together another guy that does online businesses, and what he's trying to do is go into the black community and get them signed up to do online, to work from home, because a lot of times when somebody send us an email or call us and says, well, you can work from home, this guy has made millions from working from home. And so what he's trying to do is convince blacks, because a lot of times we're doubting Thomases. He's trying to get them to know that, hey, you go out on a job and they judge you, okay, this is Johnny Brown, and he has a record, so we can't give him a job. But if you're working online, nobody can judge you, because number one, you're working from home, you're working on your computer, and you're making the same money that the next person would make doing the same thing. I hope you understand where I'm coming from with that, because basically, whether you got a record or not, you're equal to the person that don't have a record, you know? And so,
okay.
Go ahead.
Let me collaborate on that. You know, I wrote something one time, and I always tell Ms. Meredith, I always read it, because it means something to me. I said, no matter how deep of a pit you are in, I hope everybody hear this right now. Everybody who is on the air right now, I want you to hear what I got to say and understand what I'm saying. It says, no matter how deep of a pit you are in, it's not God all or not too short to reach.
Can't hear you, Johnny.
If you have, I'm going to start over. You can't hear me?
No, you just went out. You just blacked out.
I'm going to start over. It says, no matter how deep of a pit you are in, God arms are not too short to reach down and pull you out. And if you have made a mistake and repent and got right with God and go on, every day God will give you an opportunity for
sure
a fresh start with a clean slate. And the only thing that stands between you and victory is you.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying now. The only thing that stands between you and victory is yourself. You can't blame nobody else. You can't blame the white man. You can't blame the black man. You can't blame the system, because I used to do the same thing. Now, I encourage you, John Exposure, to begin to see yourself the way God sees you, as the righteousness of God in Jesus Christ. And it says, get your mind off the past. The past is called the past because it has passed it. Open your eyes up to what God wants to do today in Him. There's no dead end, only a place for new beginnings. Now, when I said that, I said it because this Him. I did 46 years in prison. I don't cry about nothing. I don't cry about the way I was treated. I'm not mad because somebody beat me down. I'm not mad because the prisons kept me in prison for 46 years. But see, I made a plan while I was in prison. God said if you make a plan, He'll direct a plan. I made a plan, and I stuck to my plan. And then when I came out of prison, I said, this is what I'm going to do. And I came out, and I did exactly what I said I was going to do. I didn't let nobody or nothing stand in my way. I didn't let nobody talk about what somebody said or how they felt about me. It didn't matter to me. What mattered to me is I was outside them prison bars, and I know it was God who put me outside them prison bars. So then I said to myself, well, if God can put me outside these prison bars, surely I can do anything. So I came out, and I got me a job. I went to school. I became a certified chef and a certified cook. I got me a job at CNN. Time I got out here, convicted felony, been in prison 4 or 6 years. You feel what I'm saying? I don't work at CNN, Picket Dinner. I don't work at Southern Buffet. We worked there at Meals on Wheels. Got a job at Meals on Wheels, became a daycare dietitian and cook, head cook. Left there, I went to Bellwood Senior Citizen Center on Bankhead, head cook. Working for a lady named Miss Banks. But you know, it didn't stop there. I moved on and I got job after job after job because I want to show men around the world, not just in Georgia and Florida. I said around the world. I don't care who you are, where you been at, what convict you are, what your background is, you a woman or a man or who you are. You can get what you want if you put God first. Now, if you don't put God first, you ain't going to get nothing because you got to put God first. And then you got to take a step out on faith. So I'm saying? And when you take a step out on faith, and people see that you taking a step out on faith. I walked up in a clothing store with a bat, and I got a record. See, now, most of these people running around and talking about, they did this. I ain't got no murder and rape and all that old crazy mess, but I got a record. You hear me? I got about 9 pages on my background record. I'm talking about every one of them is serious, straight down the line. And see, I know what I did, so I'm not crying about that. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm trying to show is this right here. I walked in that office. Black man. One of the white men. Black man. See, everybody down the line been in my past, even been black folks. You know what I'm saying? And I couldn't get no job. Oh, they're going to look down on me and say, I got a pass. I ain't going to get no job. You follow what I'm saying? But then I walked up in that black man and said, I can use you. He said, man, I can use you. He said, I want you. He said, man, I don't know why you ain't in my computer right now. He said, but he said, can you pass a drug test? I said, yeah, I can pass a drug test. See, the reason why so many black men and black women can't get a job right now because they can't pass a drug test. They said they get out of prison, they want to smoke everything, put everything in the system, drinking liquor, doing all this other crazy mess because they stayed in so long and they were doing it when they went in. So when they come back out, they automatically just pick up where they left off in the past. Don't start doing the same old thing. You follow what I'm saying? So now, I walk in there off, the man said, I need you. Oh, I went on really. I didn't stop. I kept working. I was working for a bank mortgage company. I was going out doing houses and cleaning them up and putting them in order, sweating in the hot sun and coming back in, take a shower, making money. I was making money by the day. I go out, I make $100 a day. I go out 5 days a week, I have $500 on Friday. Well, I was saving my money. So I'm saying? And I came back, you know what I mean? Now I'm out here living in a nice apartment, you know what I mean? I'm out here, I got a good job, you know what I mean? Now I'm doing what I need to do because God done blessed me in that area. So what I do is I encourage other inmates, people that's coming out of prison, people that's in prison, don't just go in prison and sit in front of the TV and watch the TV all day long and worry the hell out your mom and dad about seeing you this and seeing you that. Get in the kitchen. Get you a hustle. That's what I did. I started making sandwiches. I was selling 300-400 sandwiches a day. You follow what I'm saying? I'm living in that prison selling sandwiches. I had a center shop. I made me a business. If I couldn't get a job, I didn't have no income coming in. I started selling sandwiches. I started selling sugar. I started selling yeast. I started selling anything I can get my hand on because I know they were going to buy it. That was my way of surviving. But, you know, being in prison, you have to sit your mind on the goal. You have to start going to school, number one. Don't go sit up in the pool. You got a life, son. If you got a life, son, go up in that pool and do what you got to do. Go up in there and go to college. Go up in there and go get your high school diploma. Go up in there and pick all them classes and do what you got to do. Because you know what? A life, son, don't mean life. It just means you got a life, son. That, it don't mean life. It don't mean you ain't going to ever get out. Because I've seen a man in prison named Gordon Bell. Gordon Bell had natural life. But Roboam told Gordon Bell, don't even write us talking about getting out. You got natural life, and you're going to die in prison. But you know what? Gordon Bell walked out of that prison a free man. I seen a man come off death row, walk out that prison a free man. And I kept seeing all these people coming off death row and had life soon, getting out. And you know what I told myself? If he can do it, I can do it. That's what I said. I said, if he can do it, I can do it. See, I don't want you to be sitting down with books about, because your son got a lot of sons in prison, you know what I mean? You got to go, when he go in prison, he got to go in there and do the footwork. He got to go in there and get in that law library. He got to help you work that thing. You know what I'm saying? Because what he doing now is your ammunition on him. What he doing now is your ammunition on him. If he was falsely accused, you got a lot of people you can call. You got the Energy Project in New York. You got Barry Shack. You know what I'm saying? What they do, they give you help free. You know, Barry Shack give you help free. If you got a DNA case, let me tell you something. Your son can get up out of that. If he got a DNA case, if it's something dealing with some blood that put him in prison, if he got a DNA case, he can get up out of that prison if he didn't do it. All you ain't got to do is find out the organization with Bear Shack in New York. I got him somewhere. But I have to go through some paperwork.
But see, his is not a DNA case. His is not, it wasn't a DNA case. It's just I told you guys that he's in there for life and he's in there for his father, but these two boys jumped on my son. And when they jumped on him, from behind. He had just got out from work. And see, they didn't, the thing about it is they wasn't asking what happened and why it happened. Now, all they want to know is that somebody got shot and somebody got shot in the face. My son was on the phone with his father when these two boys jumped on him, and they were down the streets from his dad's house. And his dad heard them fighting and scuffling. See, my son feel like if he hadn't been fighting, his dad wouldn't have never came up there, wouldn't have never came up there and shot the boy. So he feel like it's his fault because the dad came up there and to defend him and shot the boys. So he don't want, he didn't want to say, oh, well, I didn't do it, my daddy did it. He won't say that. He won't say it. And that's the thing. Ever since I've been fighting this case, I've been telling the state attorney's office, the public defender's office, I've been telling them the same thing. And
Until the father write a signed affidavit statement saying that he committed that crime. It really not nothing they can do. If he won't say nothing, and the father won't write a signed affidavit statement saying he did it, then that's gonna be okay. That I don't see no way around you can get in that case.
But the thing about it is that the father told me he did it. I'm not the only one to know that he did it. I'm not the only one that know that. I mean, there's people out there in that neighborhood. I went to school for criminal investigation, and I'm a private investigator. So I went out there, and I questioned a lot of people. I found out that the state attorney's office didn't even go out there to question those boys. All they wanted to do, see, my son had a prior record. And when the boy said that they had got in a fight with my son, and that he was the one that shot him, the dad told me that when he heard them fighting with Tyrone, he ran out the house, came up the street, and by the time he got up there, the fight was over with. The fight had just broke up. My son, he's legally blind. He had lost his glasses. So my son said when the crowd pulled him apart because they knew him, and he said he couldn't see, so he ran down the alleyway to get away from the boys because he didn't know who pulled them apart. He said that when he got to the end of that building, he heard a gunshot. He thought the boys were shooting at him, and he ran. And my ex-husband told me that when he came up, the fight that had just finished, one of the guys came up to him and said, hey, they go to two boys that shot Tyrone. I mean, that jumped on Tyrone. So the dad got out of the car and walked up to the boy and shot one of them in the face. Now, I'm going to tell you something. When we were in court doing the trial, the dad never came. Never came until the day of the trial. Because for 2 years, I was back and forth in and out to the court. And so when it was time for the trial, the dad came because the dad turned my son in where he could get the reward off of my son when they put a warrant out for his arrest, where he could get the money. See, in the state of Florida, if you turn somebody in, you could get the money. So he came to court. So he was sitting right behind me and my sister and my two nieces. And when the boy came in, he said, I should have blown their damn brains out when I had a chance. That let them know that you really did shoot that boy in the face. But nobody died. The thing about it was that he feel like if he hadn't gotten in a fight with the boys, he would have just walked away. But see, they jumped on him, so how could you walk away? And I keep trying to tell him, don't fault yourself for a decision that your daddy made. Did nobody tell him to come up there and shoot nobody? But you got six kids, and you're sitting in behind them bars suffering. Your six kids is growing up without a father. So, therefore, it's a possible chance that one of your kids are going to go and do the same thing that you did, because make stupid mistakes because you wasn't there in their life. So, it's really hard for me because I have to be the mother and the father, and he has a son and a daughter. The son was having a whole lot of trouble. Hey, go sit down somewhere. He had a son and a daughter. The son was getting in trouble, and now the daughter is getting in trouble, and she was almost mixed up in a capital murder case. If she would have went with that boy, with her boyfriend, she would have been tied up in a capital murder case. And just like I told my son, I said, you're sitting there in that prison, and all your time is being wasted in the prison because you're sitting there and won't say anything, but he keeps saying, I won't tell on my daddy.
You're going to sit down here.
Well, see, and I don't know what to do. And all I can do is pray and ask the Lord to let this thing come out, because just like I said, his dad ain't the only one know that he shot him. A lady went to him and asked him how could he sit by and let his son rot away in prison for something that he did. Then the other son was involved, his son, not mine, was involved in a robbery. I believe that from what the other son told me, that the dad had something to do with that. He went to prison on a humbug for his dad. And that's what he always say when he talked to me. But he never tell me why he went to prison for his dad. He never told me what happened. And it's like these two boys got some type of loyalty to their dad for some reason, and I don't know what it is.
You ever thought about the dad might be a
carrier?
You know, when you're in a gang, you have a coat of armor. I'm telling you something. I used to be a gang leader. And when you're in a gang, you got a coat of armor that you live by. If you break that code of honor, it can get you killed, even in prison. You know what I'm saying? So you ever think of that? The dad could have been a gang leader. Huh?
I never thought of that. But
yeah.
If he's a crackhead gang leader.
Gang, well, it don't matter. You know, crackhead, gang leader, whatever. You know, if you got a dad, I know if you got somebody that's supposed to be your dad, throw up and kill somebody, that you got a lot of stuff sitting in prison.
That's the thing. He didn't kill nobody. Nobody was killed.
But the daddy did.
But the daddy shot the boy in the face.
You got all the people that seen the daddy do it or said the daddy did it, but ain't nobody came forward and said nothing. You ever thought about why?
No, we had witnesses. But this is the thing. We had witnesses. And when we came to trial, I'm thinking that the witnesses they're gonna call the witnesses and everything. They call the witnesses for the state, not for the not for my son. They didn't call his witnesses. They only called the witnesses for the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we filed, my son has filed a direct appeal. We done filed everything that we can. We just waiting on the judge to try to get this back into trial.
Okay. Well, Ms. Brooke, I wish you all the best of the luck. I know Ms. Mary wishes you the best of the luck. And, you know, we appreciate you coming on and telling us about your son. And we hope that things work out for his favor and that he gets some dresses and some clothes. Because I do know how prison is. And I don't know nothing about Florida prison. I know about Georgia prison. I know it's 10 times worse than Florida prison.
Yeah, it is. It is, but...
Yes, Johnny.
Do you have anybody else that want to get on?
We have 5157 waiting to speak. Are you still there, 5157? Okay, it appears that party is no longer waiting. I just want to thank your guests for coming. Mad Moms, that's Mothers. What is the name of it? Mothers?
Mothers on a Mission.
Mothers on a Mission. And I wish your son the best of luck, many blessings. And I say to you that it's not uncommon for innocent people to be incarcerated. The system knows about them. I read statistics that said that between 5,000 and 10,000 innocent people per year go to jail in the USA. I think the number is much higher than that, actually, much higher than 5,000 to 10,000. I read about a forensics lab where they were looking at about 140,000 cases done by this forensic laboratory technician because she was working with prosecutors to send people, innocent people, to jail on false lab tests.
Mm-hmm.
And this is intentional. So they do know about innocent people being incarcerated. In fact, I read sometime within a month that the U.S. Supreme Court had discussions regarding the death penalty. And they acknowledged, according to this article, that people have been executed wrongly. And so even to the death penalty, even to death row, there are innocent people. So we want to pray for all the innocent people incarcerated, and even the guilty people, because they are human beings, and most of them, as Jenny Strozier said, have a release date in their files. Even those who've been sentenced for life may still have a release date in their files. And we should want people to come out of incarceration as whole and rehabilitated as possible.
Exactly,
and
but we
so
know that's
really,
not going to happen.
Well, some people are stronger, like Jenny Strozier, and they come out with a strong determination to go forward. And some people are broken, incarcerated. I read tonight about a young man I'd written about. He was incarcerated for 3 years in Rikers Island jail. He went in at age 16 because he was falsely accused of stealing a book bag. And he hadn't done the book bag. He would not plea bargain. They would not give him a trial. They kept this young man 3 years, mostly in solitary confinement, and it actually ruined his mind. And I read today that he killed himself on Sunday. He finally got out of Rikers Island jail. He was doing interviews with numerous well-known journalists. I read about him today in the New Yorker. And they said that the young man did not make it. He had been so traumatized being arrested at age 16 and kept in solitary confinement, being brutalized by the prison guards as well as the inmates. And there were videos of him being brutally treated, and he just simply could not live with his memories. But then we have people like Jenny Strozier whose strength is in the Lord. He relies on God. And there is something to be said for people who have spiritual closeness with a higher being. They believe in God. They rely on him. And it seems that that helps them to have more strength in unbearable situations like Johnny Strozier. So we have one young man on the phone with us now, Johnny Strozier, who was incarcerated at age 10, and he made it. And then we're talking about another young man who was falsely incarcerated at age 16 and was kept only 3 years, not 46 years. But when he came out, he was so messed up that he hung himself. Even though he was in community college, he was taking classes. He was being interviewed for all the national news shows, but he just felt that he could not go on. And he had serious mental problems. And he's been in and out of the hospital since he got out of jail. So these are the ways that incarceration negatively impacts some people more than others. And we're so glad that you came on to tell us about your son. And we're so glad that Johnny is here to tell us about some of the circumstances that he experienced. And if you have something more to say to the public, we have a few minutes left.
Ms. Mary. Okay. Ms. Mary.
Yes, go ahead, Johnny.
Well, I just want to piggyback on something you said just then. You know, when you tell me about a young man that killed himself in solitary confinement, you know what
Well, he had gotten out of jail. They kept him 3 years without trial for stealing a backpack, and he didn't do it. He refused to lie on himself and sign a plea deal. They finally let him out of jail. He and his family were arranging a lawsuit, but he was mentally ill by the time he got out. And he killed himself on Sunday. He never did anything, according to him, except they were going to arrest him and force him to sign a plea deal, which was false. And he refused to do that. So he stayed in jail and kept his integrity for 3 years. But he was so brutalized, according to him and their videos, by the guards and the other prisoners, that he just simply could not get his life together after that. And I was just pointing out the difference between that young man and you. It's a matter of strength. It's a matter of strong belief, I think.
It was something that struck me in prison. You know, I was one of those mentally ill inmates, too. You know, but I wanted to piggyback on the strength that I got. See, when I first went to prison, I tried to kill myself two or three times. I took the boot strings out of my boot and put it around my neck and hung myself in prison. You know, the people told me they said, they took me down to medical floor, they said, it inmate dead. I'm laying on the table listening to them. Matter of fact, I'm laying there looking at them. And they said, he dead. And I was screaming and hollering on the table, but I couldn't move. And I was saying, I ain't dead. I'm laying right here looking at it. But legally, I was dead. But, you know, I'm going to tell you something. In prison, I used to be a cook. See, I used to cut my arm. I used to take a razor blade and just cut my arm. So I'm saying, because we're talking about something that is keeping it real. And this is mentally ill stuff that I was going through because I was so traumatized in prison and going through what I was going through, that I actually wanted to die. So me and my boy father, we made a pact. So we made a pact. We said, we're going to hang ourselves. We didn't got the time right. We're going to do it at 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock, me and him both jumped. He killed himself. I live. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when they had me on mental health and I was going through my problems and my demons and all my agony and the seed with the guards and all this other stuff that I was going through in prison, when they had me on mental health, you know what I told myself? I said, man, I don't need no mental health. You know what I'm saying? I don't need no medication to make me function. And they come to me talking about, well, we got this pill that we're going to test, and we're going to test it on you and see how it works. I said, man, I'm not going to be your guinea pig. You're not going to put no pill in me. I don't need a pill to make me go to sleep. I don't need a pill to wake me up, and I don't need that to make me go to sleep. I can sleep on my own. So that's what I started doing. I started going to sleep on my own. I started waking up on my own. I don't need no medication. I don't need no tranquilizer. I don't need no Tylenol. I don't need no hound dog. None of that. None of that stuff. So in 2000, I told folks at Hayes State Prison, I said, I don't need no more medication. I don't need no medication. I don't need no mental health. I don't need none of this. You follow what I'm saying? I put it down. That was in 2002. And this is where I'm at today. Because once you get addicted to that stuff, once you let these folks know to keep moving, I got a sister right now. Let me speak on that, too. Because I know you ask about it all the time. I got a sister who was in Columbus. They said she was diagnosed with skin fractures or something like that. But down in Columbus, a man tried to rob her. So she took a knife and stabbed him in the neck. So when she went to court, they told her that she was mentally incompetent to stand trial.
Let me ask you something. Who did she stab in the neck?
She stabbed a man in the bus station. Man tried to rob her.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yes, I remember talking with her.
Yeah, so now she's down in Columbus, Georgia. They sent her up to Atlanta, Georgia to go to court. I went to court with her. Me and my fiance, he went to court with her. You know, when we got in the courtroom, they were trying to keep her down there in Columbus, Georgia, so they can do whatever the hell they do to mental health inmates. You know, I know what they do. You know, they don't want me to get stars or I expose them. So I told the judge, I said, you know, my sister needs to be right here in Atlanta. She needs to be right here around her family. She needs to be right here around her family members and everybody. So we can go see her and we can keep her strong and keep her comfortable. You know, so we've been going to see her now. She up in Georgia recently now in Atlanta. So we go out and see her. My brother went to see her this morning. I went to see her this afternoon. You know what I mean? And she told me, hey, you have over there. And she's doing good. You know what I mean? We took her some clothes out there and took her some cars and matters and stuff like that there. You know what I mean? That stuff that she needed as a woman. And we took it out there to her. I enjoy doing it because, you know, that's my sister. And, you know, I don't want to see nobody mentally ill stuck up in a hospital because I know what's going on. And I told them folks out there when I went out there because I'm not a knucklehead at all. You know what I mean? A fool was the last thing I'm going to be. And I told them, I said, anything happen to my sister or she get on any kind of medication or y'all jump on or do anything illegal, I'm coming out here. And it ain't going to be pretty. See what I'm saying? I'm letting you know now. What I'm capable of as a man. See, I got something in me that they don't have in them. I got some supernatural strength.
So is she doing okay now, Johnny?
Yeah, she's doing okay. And we're going to keep going out and seeing her and make sure she's okay. And I'm trying to find out, maybe you can help me, I'm trying to find out the rights of a mentally ill person. That's what I need.
You need what?
I need a list of the mentally ill. I need the rights, the human rights of a mentally ill person.
Okay. Is she still in the hospital, Johnny?
Yes, ma'am. She out there in that Georgia region. I had that stone down there. Wait a minute.
Okay. So she's closer to you now.
Yeah. What draws the reason that?
Okay. So you can go visit her more often now.
That's out there on Pennsylvania Road. You know where that at? Panthersville Road.
Yes.
Huh?
I know where she is, at Panthersville Road. Yes, near Campbell Road.
Yeah, and you can go see her, Ms. Mary. If you're up in that area, you can go see her. Her name is Nikki Hunt. She in Building 18.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
How did her trial go? Did they charge her with anything or not?
No, they just put her down as an incompetent stand trial. So, and the doctor told her, you know, that she she do okay, take all the classes and go do this and do what they tell her to do, they're going to let her go home. So she's going to have to do this.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Because actually the gentleman was, she told us on the radio, we did interview her on the radio, and she told us during that interview that you brought her, Johnny, that it was a homeless man who was trying to rob her.
Uh-huh.
So actually it was self-defense.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad to talk to both of you. Why don't you say whatever you like to say? We have about 3 more minutes.
Okay. I'm sorry, John. I was going to tell you guys that I'm in a play. It's called The Mother's Cry. We were in Tennessee in May. And in April, we're going to be in Knoxville, Tennessee, doing the play. And in August the 8th, we're going to be in North Carolina. I don't know exactly where, but when I get the information, I'll give you guys a call back and let you know where we're going to be at. But it's called A Mother's Cry. And I'm telling you, it's an awesome play.
It's an awesome play.
Thank you. Thank you so much, you guys, for having me on. I really, really enjoy being on here, telling people my story. And maybe next time we'll get a little bit more in-depth in what I do. I hope I gave the people enough information to be able to reach out and talk if they ever need someone to talk to or someone to help them through any type of situation. I'm telling you, I've been doing a little bit of everything, and I thank God for life.
And we thank God for you, too, and we appreciate you coming here to share with the radio audience. Thank you so much. And this is Mad Mom.
And you're invited back next week. If you want to come back, you can come back and on next week, Ms. Brooks, and give us a little bit more.
Okay, I'd be more than happy to come back, and I'll let you guys know what we're doing as far as making a difference in our community. And I want to tell everybody, you need to really watch this video. It's called Hidden Color. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's a very good video.
Oh, and one more thing, Ms. Brooke. Then you say you have some music for Ms. Nair that you want to play on the radio show?
Yes. Ms. Nair, what I'll do is I'll send it to you. Can I email it to you? Go on and send me a friend request on Facebook. My name on Facebook is Vicky Thomas. M-I-C-K-E-Y Thomas. 2 words.
And in case there are 2 Mickey Thomases, what does your profile picture look like?
My profile picture, I have curly hair, I'm brown skin, and I have on like a black vest.
A black dress. Okay,
no,
I'll look for you, Vicky mm-hmm. Thomas. And
no,
my name is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L, and I have on a brown dress and a tiger print scarf and eyeglasses.
Okay, now not Vicky.
Okay.
Mickey, M is in Mary.
Like Mickey Rooney.
Yeah, no, like Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse.
Yes, like Mickey Mouse, Mickey Rooney. I know Mickey.
Okay.
Mickey, and it's Mickey Thomas.
Yes.
My name is Johnny Scholes. You can never see me on Facebook. I ain't on there.
Well, Johnny Stroger, give your contact information before you go, Johnny, and let the people know about your being available for speaking engagements working around your work schedule.
Okay, you know, I want to share this with you right here, right quick. I had a lot of information yesterday where a lady gave me a call, and a lady told me that she wanted me to come out and talk to her 8-year-old grandson. Said he was off the hook. I told her, I'm coming to get it. I told her I was coming to get it. I said, man, I'm going to get that 8-year-old because you know what? He's going to be the one I'm going to have to deal with. I'm going to go pick him up. She said, come get it. Because the boy done got out of control, so he wanted to fight and do everything. So I said, I'm coming to get it. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. So you got to mentor him.
Uh-huh.
That's great. That's what we need is men who will help mentor our young men. And you're also available for speaking engagements. Is that right, Jenny Strozier?
Yes, ma'am. I'm available for speaking engagement. And, you know, I'm available to come speak at your church. I'm available to come speak it to your kids. I'm a motivating speaker. If you need someone to come speak, I come speak anytime, anywhere. If you need, get in contact with me. You can get in contact with me at 678-516-4993. That's 678-516-4993. Day or night, call, and I'll be there.
Yep, and me
wonderful,
too, Mary.
Jenny.
Yeah, me too,
Give
Mary.
Your number again, Mad Moms. Give your number again.
Okay, I do speaking engagements as well. I just did one this evening. My number is Patricia Brooks with Mad Moms, Mothers on a Mission. My number is area code 904-894-7251. That's Mad Moms, Mothers on a Mission, Patricia Brooks.
Well, that's wonderful, Ms. Brooks. Wonderful, Mr. Strozier. Here's another good show in the can for us to refer back to, for individuals to be able to share with others in their online networks. We're talking to a mother who has a son who's a lifer who is innocent and behind bars, and she's helping other people. However she can, whether they're incarcerated or reentering society. And, of course, she's in Florida. What city area are you near in Florida?
I'm in Jacksonville, Florida.
She's in Jacksonville, Florida area. And then we also have, of course, the host of our show, Mr. Jenny Strozier, Keeping It Real. He's telling us about his incarceration for 46 years, in the state of Georgia, and following Mr. Strozier as he reenters society. And do you want to know what I know, ladies and gentlemen? Mr. Strozier, the job that he says that he got since he's been out of jail, which has been 2 years, this man goes out and he seeks and he finds. He seeks and he finds. Whereas we have so many people who have not got that kind of background of hard time, and they say there are no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something we need to wonder about. How is it that a man can come out of jail with 46 years of hard time and get a nice job, whereas we have young men who cannot get jobs, they say, and they don't have that kind of background? I believe, as Mr. Strozier said, they're letting drugs get in their way. They can't pass a drug test. Let's talk some more about that next time, Jenny Strozier, okay?
All right.
God bless you both. And we thank you for coming on air. Thank you, audience, for sharing with us part of your Saturday night. Please come back next Saturday night at 9 p.m. for Jenny Strozier Keeping It Real. And Mr. Strozier and I have made a deal because sometimes he has speaking engagements and sometimes I have had other things on schedule. We have decided that whenever we don't come on air at 9 o'clock Saturday night, please check with us at 9 p.m. Sunday night, and it's Eastern Standard Time. And you also heard from the mother who was speaking from Mad Moms, that's Mothers on a Mission, and she invites you to go to her Facebook page and learn more about her and her organization and join them, become a friend to Mothers on a Mission, that's M-O-M. And so God bless you all. Thank you very much. We look forward to you joining us Tuesday night for a Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, that's Ralph Porter's show, What's Happening And as you know, on Sunday night, we will be on air at National Network in Action Channel. That's NNIA1, and my name is Mary Neal. The name of that show is Mary Loves Justice Prayer Meeting. This week, we're going to pray about forgiveness. We're going to pray and talk about forgiveness. And my subject matter regarding forgiveness may be a little different than other people's. We'll be talking from Luke 17, verse 3, where Jesus Christ, he said, it's in red in the Bible. Jesus Christ said, if your brother sins against you, and if he repents, forgive him. That's Luke chapter 17, verse 3. If your brother or sister sins against you, if he repents, forgive him. And I want to ask you, first of all, who is your brother or sister? And secondly, did your brother or sister repent? We have a lot of people who are so quick to forgive when nobody asked them for their forgiveness. Nobody has said they're sorry for what was done, and they're steadily doing these things that were done to you and to others. So do you owe forgiveness to a person who is not repentant? That is the question. I don't think you do, according to what I read in the Bible. We do not owe forgiveness to people who are not repentant of what they've done wrong. That is my understanding, and we will talk about that Sunday night on the Mary Loves Justice prayer meeting, 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. And so I want to thank you all for joining us tonight on the Jenny Strozier Keeping It Real show, and ask you to come back next Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. If we're not on for some reason Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, we look forward to your joining us Sunday night at that same time. We're following Mr. Jenny Strozier on his reentry back into society. And we want to thank you again for tuning in. Please share this tape with your friends and online groups. God bless you, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.